Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and here with me is your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Tim Goodman. How you, Tim?
AKA the Chief.
Hey, howdy, Chief. I like to say it that way because I discovered a while ago that there are lots of shows that you just don't want to bother reviewing, that you pawn off on other people, which makes you chief, but not only, because there are the poor people who have to pick up your scraps.
Who do the other things. Yeah. Yes, yes. I actually like the title Chief. I at the beginning, I was like, really? Huh, Chief TV Critic. All right, whatever you guys want. And then I was like, yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah,
I know. Although I will come clean and say really no one calls me Chief.
Chief, no.
I just wanted to throw AKA the Chief in there.
Yeah, that's good. Maybe we can get it trending.
It might catch on. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah, it could happen. This is Lucky 7, our 7th of this incarnation, volume 4 or whatever for the comic book nerds out there, of the TV Talk Machine. So look at that, 7 in a row. Look at
that's
us.
A stunner.
Woo-hoo. Every week, I feel like we just congratulate ourselves for having another episode.
Well, we should, really given the terrible history that I'm sure the new listeners
have no idea. Yeah,
but we can just say that there was a period of irresponsibility.
Yes,
and this
podcast has been many things. At one point, it was twice a week, and then at other points, it would go months between episodes. And we're trying to, with this incarnation, to just keep it, as you say, tight and bright, under an hour, once a week. Get it done.
Was there a period where we actually went a year between podcasts? There might have been.
Yeah. Oh, more than one.
Sorry, newcomers. That's not going to happen. The irresponsible years.
That's not going to happen now.
Not going to happen.
We got it rolling.
We're rolling. We're doing great.
So I thought we would start with some listener feedback because we got some. And just to remind listeners, if they want to give us feedback, you can tweet at us. You can tweet to @TVTM right on the Twitter, and we'll see that. Tim is at Bastard Machine. I am at Jay Snell. You can go to the Facebook group and post. It is facebook.com/TV Talk Machine, all one word. I looked it up.
Oh, you looked it up.
I looked it up.
Uh-huh. But maybe you were looking it up when you were doing the show capsules or whatever it was that someone called you out about.
Exactly, which I did do. I did fix the show notes for episode 5.
I saw it. It was very thorough. It was impressively thorough.
I had to listen to the podcast to do that. That's a lot of work, let me tell you.
You even had a hot link to a Nina.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
I
yeah.
was really impressed by that.
I was no Irish need to apply. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I had to be done.
Yes.
So you can also email us if you would prefer the traditional path. Email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com, and that'll get to us.
We're kind of all set up for if you want to get in touch with us.
Yeah, you just need to do it. And so here are some people who did.
Oh, okay.
We got an email from Dan, listener Dan.
Hey, Dan.
And Dan says, thanks for the excellent podcast. I've been listening since episode 1. Can't believe I haven't written yet. So here's my question. Given the serialized nature of so many shows, what would be the shows that are 1 or 2 or 3 seasons old that you recommend I catch up on before starting into the latest season? So, like, you know, what's running now that you should dip into the archives on, like, Netflix or something and then bring yourself up to speed? Have any thoughts about it? He recommends something like Orphan Black or The Americans, which are both perfectly good choices, I think.
Oh, well, absolutely. I would do both of those instantaneously. I mean, there's only been 2 seasons of Orphan Black, and I was, right, like I said before, I was
so
totally
good
on board with that from the beginning. There's been 3 seasons of The Americans. The next one's about to start soon. And in fact, I just today, as we're recording this, I was writing a column about, I was reviewing a new series, mini series about spies on BBC America called The Game, set in 1972 in England. And as a sidebar, my boss had wanted me to come up with my five favorite TV spy series on the side. And, you know, number one, without question, is The Americans.
Ah.
So he should definitely track that down.
Did you mention Spy?
I did not.
Have you seen Spy, the sitcom?
Nope.
English sitcom? Oh, it's on Hulu. It's actually pretty funny.
So much TV.
I know.
It's crazy.
There is. You can have one of your underlings review it.
No,
I probably did.
I love the spy drama. So I'm in a couple. And I was trying
to keep... This is a spy sitcom, but yeah, sure.
Oh, kind of like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Exactly. It's a very poorly run spy outfit. That's, I think, fair enough. And it's funny though. It's on Hulu. People should check it out.
I can get pretty obscure with my knowledge of British spy stuff. I don't know that one, but I do know Danger Mouse, the cartoon.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
That gets a little street cred.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. Any other? So yeah, shows that are like still around, kicking around. I tell you, watching Flash, I want to go back and watch Arrow from the beginning.
That's a good pick right there. I think that's strong. I would do Arrow for sure.
The 100. I hear we actually have some people who started watching the 100 based on our not even recommendation, like based on another listener's recommendation that you watch it. And said that it's actually pretty great. So,
well, guess who else started watching the 100?
Oh, did you?
Oh, I got the first season DVD, and I think what are we on the second or third season?
I think it's the second season now.
Yeah, second season, but the second or third episode of the
season. Right.
Pretty sure that's what it is. So yeah, I'm almost all caught up. I'm trying to watch some of the new stuff, but then dipping back into the old stuff. But yeah, that's a good one. I wonder if people like. This seems obvious. You know, I think the question might have been geared towards maybe more obscure stuff that he's missed out on. So I doubt that he's like referencing like Blacklist or things like Elementary or Person of Interest.
Right.
But those are all broadcast versions that I would say, you know, they deserve to go back and take a peek on. I mean, wouldn't you think that those would qualify?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, the familiar ones, of course, are. You know, people always say, what should I watch? Well, you have to watch The Wire. You have to watch The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Mad Men. Those are kind of essential ones. You know what? Here's what I would tell somebody to watch right now that's a little bit more current within the last year. I think they should watch the French, quote-unquote, French zombie series, The Returned.
Right.
That's fantastic. I think that they should watch the first season of the British series, Broadchurch, which is going to come out soon in its second season in England, not to be confused with Grace Point, the American version.
Right.
Which I'm pretty sure we can say is not coming back once its run is done. I mean, Fox will run that whole thing.
Sure.
The ratings on it are not good. And, yeah, pretty sure that is not coming back. That I would do. I would also track down. It's not on multiple seasons, but I would track down. God, I'm trying to think if ones that he could get back into. Well, I'm not a. I don't know. Some of the stuff, and this is kind of an interesting question because some of the stuff gets tainted. Like I would say, I would dissuade people from going back and watching Sons of Anarchy, for example.
Hmm.
What are your thoughts on this?
Because I've never seen Sons of Anarchy. Has it just sort of degraded to the point where it's not? It sort of soured you on it?
Yeah, definitely. It's in its final season. I'm not watching it. One that just, for example, I don't know. To me, this is kind of a fascinating thing, and I can get all wonky on it. Probably more information than he wanted to know. But you know, what makes television so fascinating is that it's an ongoing story, right? So, what have you done for me lately? You can be brilliant for the first three seasons, then if you suck. And you continue to suck. That's your legacy. No one's ever going to say, well, yeah, the first couple of, you know, stop watching after the first couple. It's very hard to tell someone to start something if they know that
it's going to go bad.
That it's going to go south. It really is not a good thing.
This is what I hear about Homeland. I haven't seen Homeland. And by all accounts, that first season of Homeland is pretty good. But that apparently it just goes completely off the rails.
Absolutely. And I am a... how will we put this? I am one of Homeland's biggest detractors.
Uh-huh.
But
were you always, or did you get turned around on it?
I got turned around. Yeah, the first season, I think, is brilliant. I think the first season, enclosed as it is completely, if it just ended there, is great. As soon as they got into the second and third seasons, terrible. Just terrible. So, I mean,
so that fails Dan's premise because he wants to catch up and then be good. We got a lot of good things. I mean, he made two great suggestions with Orphan Black and the Americans, and then. You know, Returned and Broadchurch and Arrow, we throw that in there. Why not?
Sure. Why not? I think you can do. And then, again, there's more broadcast ones that you can do. But, yeah, I do think that in a bigger picture discussion about do you go back? And we're in such an area now where we can, you know, pull things off the shelf or we can stream them. Everything's at our fingertips. And so I think it's a much more pertinent question now. In the world we live in, where like, do you go back and say, "Oh, hey, like I never saw The Shield. Should I watch that?" Well, sure you should. And sometimes people will say, "Okay, maybe season 4 and 5 not so great. I don't know." It's the thing when people say, should I watch Friday Night Lights? Sure. Just skip the second season.
Yeah. Skip. Yeah. Especially the first part of the second season.
Yeah.
I actually think that there's something to be made. I wish Netflix would do this where people could share playlists, because I would love for people to be able to be like, here's the ones you should watch and here's the ones you should not watch. Or even like, you know, even like within episodes, like just skip this back half of this episode or whatever. But it would be cool to like have the, because I tried to do this once with a Doctor Who, like here's the playlist to get into Doctor Who, and it skips some bad episodes and stuff like that. And some people don't like that idea. They're like, you just got to power through it. But I don't know. I kind of like that idea of like with Friday Night Lights, just being able to sort of, I mean, they ignored the second season. So, I mean, literally things happened in the second season that just they pretended never happened in the third season. So you could just jump right
over.
Even
the truly beloved community, people will say, okay, skip the season where it was taken away.
Yeah, except for like those like one or two good episodes. The rest of them just forget that it was.
It was a series that was hijacked from its creator, Dan Harmon. So don't watch those ones.
Right.
But that is very – you made me laugh out loud though, where you would actually start and say, you know what? Go ahead and watch the first half hour of this episode and then bail. Like that is – that's really commitment.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this in the terms of Doctor Who, where there are some like season long arc points that happen at the end of some of those episodes, but the episodes themselves are terrible, and it's like, can I just have them watch the last 5 minutes of that episode? Because that's all they need to know. They don't need to see. It's like, why are there these lizard people here now? It's like, look, you don't need to know that. Just this guy dies, and that's important next week, and then you move along. But certainly, being able to like set up playlists where you tell people just skip this or skip that. But I'm with you on Friday Night Lights. Just skip season 2. Forget about what Landry and Tyra do. We're not going to talk about it. Just don't.
Now everybody's going to watch it. I got to see season 2 because
don't.
Jason and Tim said don't watch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Do the opposite and see where it gets you.
Rubbernecking.
Anyway, that is Listener Dan. So thank you for emailing Listener Dan. Our pal My Vogon Poetry is back.
Oh, nice.
And this is one of our the 100 updates. He wanted to say he thought the season 2 is shaping up to be more like a combo of The Walking Dead, Gravity, and Pretty in Pink. not the Breakfast Club at all. But he says still very entertaining. And listener Luke said, wow, I'm glad I listened to you guys and started watching the 100. I thought it would be too teen, but it's not. But although at times it can get really dark, which there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I like dark.
Yeah, so the 100, some more endorsements. I'm gonna watch that. I'm gonna find the first season and dig
excellent.
Into that.
I like that.
You sold me on it. Eric, listener Eric, wrote in and wants to know if you have any thoughts on the cancellation of Longmire, which is what A&E.
Yes, that's A&E.
Popular, good ratings, wrong demographics. And I heard that it may not be canceled in that they're, as every canceled show is now, shopped around to streaming and things like that. Do you have any thoughts about Longmire getting the axe?
Yeah, I think that despite my absence from covering Longmire and you know, probably accurate complaints from people when I left it off of the power rankings. I did like the show. I think it was well put together. I thought it was had a great cast. And I do not think that's the end of the series. I think they should definitely shop that around. And somebody could pick that up. You do have a built-in audience. But you're always dealing with people that these I'm going to call them niche cable channels because they're not that big, but they're not that deep into scripted material. I just don't think that they properly if you only have five or less scripted series, it's really hard to sort of build an audience year round and to keep the interest and to sort of keep them like, oh, hey, Longmire, remember Longmire, we're coming back. You know, it's really hard to do that.
You can't remind them because they're not watching your channel.
No, because they only came for that, right? Because that's all you really have. And that's the only one of the maybe four or five that you have that they like. So it's like we talked about last week.
With BBC America, right? You know, you put that investment in there and it's hard to get people to come back to you.
You have to be a year-round engagement. That's what I believe in. But yeah, I think they should keep shopping Longmire.
All right. Listener Jeff.
Jeff.
We talked about on the subweb, extra content on the subweb last week. And this is about that. He says, in reference to having extra content above and beyond the standard television show time constraints, I'd like to remind you of the extra webisodes that Battlestar Galactica put out during their off-season. That was a great way to provide fans with some extra stuff, telling a little bit of background story that the regular episodes didn't cover. And I thought that was a good point. That's a good example of making an effort to provide something to keep the... It's like in baseball that you get the hot stove league, right? It's just keep people, give them something to chew on during that cold off season between episodes.
Oh, absolutely. That is very smart. I think that's a great example, and we bypassed that one. Probably when I was stumbling to find out what the name of one of those shows was.
Right. One of those many zombie-related shows. But yeah, that's a good example where they planned that up front to build to shoot that extra stuff when they were in production, so that they could parcel it out during the off season, which is a smart thing.
Yeah, and they did like little Cylon movies and all that stuff. It was good. I think that's a smart way to do it.
I think they even made it so that they could package that together and you could watch it as an episode. So in the end, you could just, like on the DVD, you could just watch it and it felt like a bonus episode, even though it was parceled out in little 5-minute chunks, which is smart.
I believe that's true. I believe that to be true.
I think I remember that. There are a lot of people who say that Battlestar Galactica would be on that list of shows that you can't recommend because it didn't end as well as it began. Although I kind of disagree. I think it kind of, you know, I think it definitely was falling apart as it got to the end, but I didn't react as badly to the end of it as I think many of the fans.
I think that I did not either react. I mean, I was a little disappointed. It wasn't like Lost, which I think I was more like, oh wait, this is kind of exactly how I thought the show was. That's what I said they were, right? They were kind of in this, you know, yep. I don't want to give it away in case people want to go back and watch
Spoilers
the 6 seasons of it.
You should watch Lost. There's one. Catch up with Lost.
Absolutely. Talk about going down a rabbit hole of wasted time, but you'll enjoy it, though, at least.
It's a great rabbit hole.
It's so good. But I think that I didn't mind the ending to that. No. I really did not for Battlestar Galactica. I think
fans, you know, the things that go unsaid or the things that are so, it's very easy to ignore parts of the show you don't like, and where that bites you is if the creator actually thinks that those parts are really important and they're gonna and with Ron Moore, I think it was very easy for fans of Battlestar Galactica to like ignore all of the religion stuff and the fact that the Cylons worship one set of god or one god and the people worship these other gods, and I think a lot of sci-fi fans are like, yeah, religion, whatever, and just kind of didn't worry about it. And that was fine, except that in the end, that was what the finale was about. If at that point you can't deny it anymore, and so what do you do? Well, I think you get angry is what you do, and that's what they did. So I was interested. I was intrigued by the whole like what is the Cylon God? What does that really mean from the beginning? So for me, it was like, oh great, there it is.
That may be the most succinct and accurate description of actually what people should have been paying attention to and why they were annoyed at the finale that I've ever heard.
All right.
In my whole life.
I'm available for parties.
For a later discussion,
yeah,
we could do like a geek roundtable, or we could just, you know, my geekness cannot contribute with, you know, it cannot do battle with yours because you have much more knowledge about such things, sci-fi things and comic books and whatnot. But I do think that there is a freewheeling discussion to be had about why so many science fiction series ultimately end up departing or ending and sort of here we go with this word, genuflecting to religion in the end. I'm fascinated by that because you would think science based, their religion has no place in it, but a lot of series have kind of like had a religious aspect to it.
Yeah, the X-Files did that too, as I recall. With so Scully's Catholicism and Lost absolutely does. No, okay, I'm going to file that away as a topic.
Okay.
Ding, filed
Ding.
Away.
Yeah. We have a lot of great special effects. There's the breaking, which is a holdover from the old TVTM.
Yeah.
But now do we have what, Ding?
Ding? Well, no, let's not commit to Ding as an actual thing because it's kind of lame. But anyway, I
was going to say, we're really low fire.
Yeah, I'll file it away for later.
All right.
Listener Dean has a question for Mr. Cranky Pants.
Yes, Dean.
Which shows on the air did you used to watch regularly but quit? Was it a conscious choice to quit these shows, or did you just not get around to them anymore? In other words, what is the current How I Met Your Mother?
Well said, Dean. Better bring that one back around. And since I'm disconnected from Jason, I didn't get to see it on paper, so the punchline is even more effective. Well, I would say Sons of Anarchy for sure.
Yeah,
I bailed on that. Homeland. My feeling is if it gets to the point where it's more of a chore to watch it, or if you can't believe, like I just no one in Sons of Anarchy was appealing to me. I didn't root for anyone. I cared not a whit about anybody left in the series. And no matter how dark I like to go in my series, no matter how nihilistic I think that things can be and enjoyable when they do go there. The fact of the matter is, if you create a series where there's no likable characters, you're going to lose part of your audience. And I bet on that. You know what? A current one that I wrote about was, and it wasn't so, well, there's side effects to it, but there wasn't so much that I just didn't believe in the series anymore. But I wrote about Boardwalk Empire, which finished its run like last week.
Right.
And I did a lot on that. And I had said, you know, it was really hard for me to watch season three because I thought, oh, they're just doing the same thing over and over again. And as I detailed in my column that people can find on THR.com, it is that the big crime of Boardwalk Empire was that it was not compelling. You did not want to sit down and watch it right when it happened, like The Walking Dead, you know, or anything else, Breaking Bad, etc. But also that they just fundamentally created two characters who were their central characters, Nucky and Margaret, who were the least compelling characters on the show. So everybody who was a sub character was more interesting. Everybody that they brought in as a supporting actor for a season or two as an arc were more interesting. So I was troubled with that. So, but I gave up on that in the third season. I was compelled to come back and watch it sort of Netflix style in the fourth season because they got their act together. And but then again, I kind of was like, I forget it. Season five, this is your last season. You're boring me still already. It's just too slow. But compelled to by my job, I went back and again Netflix style right up until the finale, and then wrote about it and put my thoughts down on paper. And that's what they were. That, you know what, it was very well done, but it never achieved its potential.
Huh. All right, we've got,
and there's lots of stuff. I think comedies are one of the easier ones.
Oh, sure.
You can get out of,
because
it's easy just to abandon them if they don't become funny, because comedy is subjective and some weeks are funnier than others, and those tend to stack up. But yeah, there's you know, for me, if a show is, for me to bail on a show that I really love, it has to do something egregious.
Right. I mean, Modern Family is an example of a show that I don't actually think is terrible or anything. Yeah. Now, but I've mm-hmm. given up watching it because it's just, they're funnier shows and it's not as funny as it used to be. And I don't have any animosity toward it. I just have sort of struck it off the list. Yeah.
Exactly. And that is, again, another fine summation that sometimes it doesn't do anything wrong other than it's not as good as it used to be.
Yeah. And you got other stuff that's coming up, and it's like an old baseball player, Tim. They may still be one of the, you know, best people at playing baseball, but you got this rookie who's better. So you got to play the rookie.
Is this a Tim Hudson, Madison Bumgarner comparison? I don't know.
It may be. Okay. We have two more. One of which is actually a great segue into our next topic. But before we get there, listener Chris asks, what did you think about the Simpsons Family Guy crossover episode? And don't say the Simpsons was great back in season six. This was on Facebook. I responded to him by saying, you know, the Simpsons was great back in season six. Any thoughts about the Simpsons and Family Guy? And I know last week you said sort of, or I guess 2 weeks ago when we were listing out the season that I had to go back and listen to write all those down, you sort of gave a salute to the Simpsons and Family Guy and said sort of, they are also present. So what are you thinking?
they were present. I kind of liked it. That's a little anticlimactic in that they've been on for so long and they finally decided to do this. I guess there was a little detente in the camps to get it done, whereas they used to be much more hostile towards each other. But you know, time heals all wounds, I guess. And I thought it was well done. But I think it would have had a bigger impact had it been two or three seasons ago. So, but I liked it.
Right.
I liked it. I to me, it's always interesting. Like, okay, this is an interesting concept. On, you know, it worked. It was good on paper, and it worked on the episode. But it wasn't like I defined the TV season, right? I mean, it was just it was an interesting hour, and then people went and forgot about it.
What do you think about the that FXX marathon with all the Simpsons episodes?
No, that was brilliant. I mean, that's brilliant on a number of fronts because it reestablishes to people how great Simpsons was or is and how much you can like it. Yeah. Do we argue like, oh, it was great in season six, you know, like the Dickie comment that's put in there when, you know, we're in season 148.
Yeah.
It was a great business decision to put it there because that just launched FXX. I mean, mm-hmm. Ask any show that has had the misfortune of being moved over to FXX when it's not quite It's still baking. It's still marinating. And then, you know, it's hard to make FX people who watch shows say, oh, yeah, that's your favorite show. We don't have it on FX anymore. It's this little sister channel that we forgot to tell you about. And it's not right next to you on the dial all the time. So this was a financial decision and a creative decision. And they made the right play. They bought every Simpsons episode, plus the movie, et cetera. And they have this amazing, you know, online portal or whatever. But to be able to relaunch a network that was kind of struggling and say, okay, now you know it as the one where you spent the last month
watching The Simpsons.
Right, exactly. That is where we're going to put younger skewing shows that you might appeal to. So in a mini way, and I think they talked about that it went up like 35% in viewership, which is just great. And that just tells you like, oh, we've discovered it now. So it worked.
So our last piece of feedback is a good lead in to one thing we can talk about today. It's from Twitter account WBC5, the mysterious WBC5, who simply writes, this week on TVTM, October series, changing cast, ensemble piece, absurd storylines, clear resolutions, and the horror of Joe Buck. So I guess WBC5 would like us to talk about, honestly, the thing that I've been spending almost all of my television time with for the last month, and I know that you have been spending a lot of time with it too. Like, it's baseball, which as we record this, it is the day after the Giants won their third World Series in 5 years. Woohoo! Some Giants fans here. Sorry to the Royals fans. Royals were great.
Let's go Giants.
But you know,
yes, Royals were great.
It is a lot of time. I mean, when you watch sports on TV, and you mentioned two episodes ago when we were putting together your grid, you kept mentioning football too. So obviously, yeah, you're watching sports on TV. Do you are you applying your critical skills to those broadcasts as you're watching them? Do you do that? Do you think about like all the ways that certain kinds of sports broadcasting is good or terrible?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially when you're watching the football and whatnot. But I know that Joe Buck is a lightning rod. The hard part, you know, like I should have been the Giants fan that was a little more tech savvy and should have hooked up my KNBR broadcast.
That's what I did.
To do that. Yeah, I know. And everybody made fun of me for not doing it, but. You know, I'm lucky to show up.
If you have a like a surround system, the trick is you can just disconnect your center speaker, and then you can't hear the announcers on Fox anymore. You can do that for any sporting event, because if you've got the like 5.1 system, if you pull out the wires from the center speaker, seriously, then you can hear the game, but you can't hear anything the announcers say because they put them right in the center channel. And so I pulled the wire out of my center speaker and then turned on the MLB app and played John Miller, and that was great.
Because isn't there like a slight delay? How'd you line it up?
Yeah, it's DVR. I just paused it briefly until it lined up. You know,
you're a tech madman.
Wait for the pitch to hit the catcher's glove and press pause, and then when you hear the pitch hit the catcher's glove on the radio, you press play and you're good to go. But now it's over, so you can't use that technique for another year.
Well, it's another year.
It is there.
You know, but it'll be an uneven year, so we can't win. You know,
it's room for someone else.
We got three.
So Joe Buck, I mean, I think one of the reasons people don't look, if you're a fan of your local team and you're used to hearing, especially in baseball, you hear your local team's announcers and they know everything, and they know that you are a fan of that team. And so everything, even if they're not homers like the guy in Chicago for the White Sox, Hawk, you know, who literally at the end of an inning, he'll be like, the score, good guys 2, bad guys 1. It's like, what? But even if you're not a homer like Hawk Harrelson, you know, they know. I mean, Mike Kruko is a Giant and Dwayne Kuiper is a Giant, and they root for the Giants. And even if they're pros, they know that they're speaking to Giants fans. And so then when you get these national telecasts and they're not catering to you as a fan, it feels like they're your enemy, and they're not really being your enemy. They're just not being your friend.
Right.
And Joe Buck is like super professional, but he's also super like not Rudy at all. And so I think people come to hate Joe Buck sometimes fairly because he is kind of robotic, but also unfairly because he's not cheering for your team, which is not his job.
No. And I think that I wonder if what part of that is that those of us here on the West Coast, Even if you're in LA, or you could be up on, you could be in Seattle or Portland or wherever. There is definitely an East Coast bias to the sports coverage on the on Fox and ESPN and all the big ones. I mean, it's just true. We are.
There's more people in the Eastern time zone, so
they are. Well, I mean, you know, the viewing thing that's kind of shocking is, and a long time ago, critics were kind of, as they do every 4 years, really grilling NBC about why is the Olympics, why is it tape delayed, and all this stuff about, you know, how the West Coast gets screwed. And they said, look, 88% of the audience is in the East Coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, that tells you something. That's why we're always going to get preempted, or not preempted, but we're going to be tape delayed. So,
although ironically, I think we ruin some sports because they're afraid to put them on too early. Some of it is they want to put them on in prime time, but like baseball starting at 8 Eastern.
Yeah.
Partly that's because they don't want to start it in the afternoon on the West Coast. And they could really screw us and just start the games at 7, and they'd all start at 4 Pacific, and nobody would see the games. It's bad enough at 5 if you've got a commute,
right,
that you're gonna miss them. But I don't know, Joe Buck always seems. I think he's a perfectly capable guy. He seems perfectly reasonable. I don't always hear enthusiasm from him. Actually, the thing that drives me crazy about him is when he does football. He's like such an excitement killer, because he'll say, like, for the touchdown, no flags. Like, that's his thing that he thinks is exciting, is that there wasn't a penalty. That's like you got a new puppy, but it'll be dead in 15 years. It's like, come on, Joe, let me have this,
right?
But
yeah,
he's a little too, you know.
Certainly was not the lightning rod that a certain retired catcher was.
No, although I honestly, on my little sports Twitter list that I curate, there were a lot of people complaining about Harold Reynolds this year.
I like Harold Reynolds. Now, that's one where I'll come out and I'll defend. I actually am a fan of Harold Reynolds.
Well,
I'm not going to say that I'm a fan of his personal life, because there's things that have happened
right
there. I'm a fan. He's a guy who knows baseball.
He's a jock. He's a former player. And I think that Fox did the right thing by balancing him with Tom Verducci. I have some issues with some of Tom Verducci's stuff. His coverage of the steroid era and his sort of sanctimonious lecturing about, I think he's actually the reason I canceled my subscription to Sports Illustrated, because I think he's just a little bit too holier than thou. But the fact is, the guy knows baseball, and he knows it from a perspective that's very different from Harold Reynolds's. And I felt like that by sticking those two guys in the booth with Buck, they're trying to not just have it be, it's going to be the jock's view of baseball. Because did you see that moment where they all held up their scorecards? And Buck and Verducci have these meticulous baseball scorecards, and Harold Reynolds has got like a trapper keeper with doodles on it, and that's
exactly
it, and nothing else. He's just, that's not why he's there. I think it's kind of ridiculous, but I'm glad they balance him with Verducci.
Yeah, I think he knows what he's talking about. He has interesting perspective as somebody who follows baseball, and you know, he kind of nails it. The problem that I think is, you know, you talked about they're not rooting for the home team because they're a national broadcast, and so we're used to something a little more knowledgeable. I don't think it's that they're completely unknowledgeable or they're just trying to go down the middle. I think one of the things is that when they're not knowledgeable about something that's really obvious to us, as fans of the home team, that's annoying.
Right. And they're pitching it at a broader audience too. They're trying to reach people who have never seen these teams before, obviously, but also probably, you know, some percentage of the audience only really watches the postseason or even only watches the World Series. And so you end up with like the hardcore fans look at a game and are like, why aren't they talking about the pitch selection that's happening right now? And they do that more than they used to.
They do that. And I think that Harold Reynolds is good at that too. And so some of the other guys that are brought in from MLB, I think, are like that.
Yeah. So I think it's better than it was, but it's not, you know, if you're used to like super technical knowledge, you're not going to really get it. And, you know, Fox loves its storylines, so they do those kind of interminable interviews out of the dugout while important things are happening, and they show people in the stands praying. I mean, it's like the Fox playbook is there, and I roll my eyes at some of that stuff, but I think it's a capably produced thing. And you know, they've been trying to put cameras in weird places for years, but I feel like they got it right now. Like, they've got that thing that actually shows you out in front of home plate, and the thing that actually shows people touching the base, instead of like, we put a camera in the base and you can't see anything except a foot stepping on the camera. They like, I think, and even their little pitch tracker thing showing you whether it was a ball or a strike, I feel like it's actually useful now and doesn't feel like a gimmick like it did 5 years ago.
Absolutely. I was thinking that last night. Because my kids finally decided to watch. I got them to watch the Game 7 with me because I'm like, okay, yes, you spoiled children. You have already got two world championship rings. And so, you know, it's not a big deal for you. But we're about to possibly win Game 7. So I got them to watch it and they were excited. You know, I'm sure it would have been better if it was somehow mixed into a Minecraft game. Or
yeah, sure. That'll be a Fox innovation next year. It's Minecraft baseball.
But I thought it was very well done. It was engaging. The thing that always kills me though is like, you know, it's like they just, and this, I'm exaggerating, but it's like they just discovered Madison Bumgarner. He's good.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, okay, now you're going to curse us because all you're doing is talking about, you know, 0.29. I can't get it. You know, all this stuff. I think that I'm always sort of let down as a hometown fan when they'll say stuff like, gee, you know, Perez, can I, you know, the guy can't hit, but boy, he can field. That's kind of a shocker. Well, no, not really. You know, and you know, it's like if you knew our team a little bit better, you would understand that it's built for certain people to do certain things.
Right. I don't know. Sports. It's so much better than you look. We can complain a lot about sports, but if you look at even like on ESPN Classic or MLB Network or something at a broadcast from 5 or 10 years ago, not just the HD, but just in general, it is shocking how terrible it is. It is. We've come a long way, especially technically, but even in terms of like understanding and being intelligent about like the analysis in football and baseball, I think it's way better than it was 10, 15 years ago.
It is, and I think that we're at the point now where I think we have so much coverage in so many different ways that if you're a savvy viewer, you can get what you want without having to complain too much. You know, it's like I really love how Europe covers soccer, which is basically let's show you.
Yeah,
let's not have an hour in the studios of talking heads. Let's show you soccer. And so it's kind of fascinating. It's like, okay, we have a half hour to kill. Instead of let's talking about it, let's just show you what's playing. You know, it's kind of amazing. And then, but now we have, you know, I think what's led to better production values and better knowledge is that we do have all of these talk shows or all of these in-studio analysis things where you can get a Harold Reynolds and get him schooled to the point where he can get out there and he can talk about, you know, pitch selection and talk to you about from a baseball player and talk about, you know, are they going to put the shift on? Does the shift work? Is that a good idea? Would you send him in this, you know, would you send the runner in this count, et cetera, et cetera. I think that comes from having a little bit of everything and then picking what works. And so I'm not complaining like I used to. I don't watch ESPN just because the aforementioned West Coast bias. But at the same time, I literally just watch the channels that are dedicated to the sports. That's for me. That's the way to go. I watch MLB for that. I watch NFL Network for football, hockey, everything. So I just tune to the source.
Yeah, one other innovation that I'm really liking. They did this with Fox on the first game of the NLCS. And they also did this, ABC did this with all the ESPN channels during the Super Bowl this year, which is they had supplemental channels that were basically like watching the game but doing different things than the main broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And they got on Fox, they got the Just a Bit Outside, which is a bunch of people from like Fox Sports.com, like baseball writers, and they sat there and they like, and some players, and they broke down the game, and that was like the Sabermetrics broadcast, so mm-hmm. that you could, and I thought that was a great idea, and I feel like that's a way. We've been talking about sports as being this platform that it's like everybody has to come and just watch the one broadcast. I feel like we're really close, perilously close to having that not be the case anymore, where you can dial up the Sabermetrics, you can put on your local announcers, you know, that you'll be able to view the game, you know, even if it's just the main channels on your TV and then on your iPad or something, you've got the supplemental material. I feel like we're almost there because they're definitely this year, I've seen it twice now, where they've, you know, literally they're putting the game on a second channel with other content on top of it. And it's pretty cool.
And you know what, some of the bigger strides in that very area were made by, surprisingly enough, through NASCAR and through golf, two of the things you know,
right.
you might not go to for innovation since they're just going around in a circle for the most part. But I love the fact that you can. I'm not sure if this element is out there before, but I wrote something about it where you could. It was not a pay-per-view where you just chose your channel. You could say, okay, you know what? I just want to go in the helmet of the 13 car, right? Even that guy might be in 23rd place.
Right.
I'm gonna be in that guy's seat. I'm gonna be in his car. I'm gonna hear what his pit crew is saying. That was fantastic. Where you could choose which car you're gonna want to be in. That's a real revelation. And then on golf, ages ago, well, not ages ago, but you know, a number of years ago, I thought when the Masters coverage was the first time I discovered this, where you know, aiming corner, all this stuff, where you would be able to say, look, we're gonna take three holes. And we're going to have dedicated cameras there running all the time. And so you can either switch over to the main thing and just follow the leaders, which is basically what golf is about. Or you can say, you know, I'm a golfer. I want to see how everybody approaches these three holes. And you can just flip between the channels. And there was like no, it was just people hitting golf balls onto the green or putting it in the water. It was amazing. It was like, okay, there's really nobody actually telling me what's happening. But I know who this is. I see the players, you know, and I'm like, okay, this is fascinating. I can actually watch just these three holes. This is great. So I love that kind of, and that Masters coverage continues. Mm-hmm. I still watch it that way.
So in the end, if you don't like the main broadcast, pretty soon it's not going to matter because there may not even be a main broadcast, or if there is, you're going to be able to pick from a menu of other things, which is it's a cool idea.
Well, you know what? Let me just close on the cool idea because I'm not watching golf anymore since I haven't played it in 10 years, 15 years. And I don't like NASCAR. I do like Formula One, and there's great coverage of that. But I will say that soccer,
oh yeah,
which I watch a lot now, and I watch a lot of soccer highlights, and I just love it. Soccer is very smart where they said, okay, yeah, we get the fact that it's kind of a long game. You know, you add in penalty times and lots of dives, you're gonna be at this for a long time. It's like a baseball game in America, although there's more going on, less mental stuff, but a lot more stuff going on. But I love that they'll say, okay, you know what? We're gonna just take the game and shrink it down to 30 minutes. That's you can find those games now, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, I remember that game, that match. But now they've just boiled it down to 30 minutes, and I love it. I think that's great.
Yeah, Major League Baseball does that now on the MLB app, where you can get a couple hours after a game, there's a condensed game, and it's like every at bat that mattered. And I think, you know, I think they try to have it be every at bat, and it's in like less than half an hour. And
yeah, it's amazing. They're doing that in football too. Yeah. I like that. You can,
that's cool
again,
stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of the postmodern take on sports coverage. Definitely.
So there's the sports. Those people who don't like sports, you can come back now.
Yeah, we might have alienated as many people as I alienated on my Twitter feed last night with all my Giants tweets.
Yeah, I did that too. So
yeah, they'll come back.
Yeah, it happens. It only happens once a year. You just gotta, and it's every other year at this point. So you want to talk about before we go? We got a little bit of time left. You want to talk about Sleepy Hollow? I know you were telling me you were interested in talking about that before we got started.
I do.
We both praised it. Here,
and I think that here on TV Talk Machine, and people, you know, that this is something that we should toss out to listeners too. Like, if you have a concern about, maybe we can't do episodes because I haven't seen particular episodes, but you know, if you have concerns about a trend on a series, send it in to us and let me take a look at it and track it, and maybe we're simpatico on those concerns. But for Sleepy Hollow, it's a series that I'm a big fan of, and you know, I've been out there saying from the very beginning that the crazier it is, the better it is. The more they try to make it serious, the worse it is. And they learned those lessons quickly. It's not a show tonally that's all over the map. It's very hard to keep it going. They have been blessed by some luck and some great ideas. And here we are in the middle of this. Well, not middle, but the beginning of the second season, and they're really taking off. But lately, the ratings are starting to dip, and I think I know why that is, because it's the same complaint that I've had from the beginning of the season. And they got too ambitious for their own good. And here's why. If you think about it, they have Ichabod Crane and Abby Mills, so those are your main characters. Then you've got Abby's sister, right? And you've got Ichabod's wife, right? And then you've got Abby's captain, Frank Irving, Orlando Jones. And then they thought, okay, well, that's kind of not enough. Let's bring in the big bad. So they brought in John Noble as Henry Parrish, who is, if you haven't been following, that's Ichabod's and his wife, Katrina's son,
all grown up, because of course they all were around 200 years ago, and so right. Yeah, it's time exactly. is funny, and yeah,
so it's and it's so you already had, and you know, there were some returning stuff like John Cho was in some episodes, and you had Clancy Brown coming back even though he's been dead. You have a pretty big lineup there, and it's a little too much, and they were kind of handling it well, and then this year, inexplicably, they have decided to add more characters, and it's just incredibly annoying. It's like they moved Orlando Jones to
the asylum, yeah.
He's in the asylum. So every time you do that, like if you're thinking about this structurally, every time you take a character, he's a peripheral character, he's not main, but he's definitely a sub character B. You move him to a place like jail. You've got him locked up now. You don't really, now you've limited his storytelling ability with him, and I think that's a bad thing. Now, if you have a series that's only in its second season, then a lot of the sub characters need to have their story arcs drawn out. I love the fact that Lindy Greenwood, the actress who plays Jenny Mills, Abby's sister, and the sisters were a key to the story. I love when she's on screen, A, because she's really hot, for starters.
Sure.
But also she's a badass, and she's different from Abby Mills, her sister, in that they just have different approaches. She's, you know, she's been in jail, she's not the cop, they different, whatever. So I wanted to know more about Jenny Mills, and they started to do that this year. But then they've introduced these new characters where, you know, Surfer Boy, if you're watching the show, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He has completely messed things up for me. So I think what they did is they said, you know what, let's bring him in and see what Surfer Boy can add to this. And it's a total distraction. It's almost like the producers said, we're not going to tell our loyal audience that we're going to bring this other actor in, and he's actually going to take up a lot of time. He's not going to just be like one guy for 1 week, which I kind of thought he was going to be. The dude has been around for a long time, and he's much too long. He's hanging around too long. And what's happened is now you have dropped a pebble into the water, and you have these ripple effects you can't fix quickly. So you've already got Orlando Jones, the captain, in the psych ward. He's basically in jail. So you bring this guy into it, and now you have, instead of Ichabod and Abby, which is Tom Meeson and Nicole Beharie, internet fans are crazy about those two.
Yeah.
Because there's like a spark of interest between them, but then again, Ichabod has got his wife, and so that makes that, you know, they're not going to get together and do it, which is important to not do that. But those two together, talking about to each other in as many scenes as possible, is the show.
That's the show, yeah.
You drop a guy into the middle of that, now you've screwed with it. And now he – not only that, now Ichabod has to play off of that guy, and it doesn't make him as quite as good. And now I've noticed in the last couple of episodes they have Abby sort of like looking longingly into this guy's eyes, even though this guy has already had a past history with Jenny. You know, and then like Jenny is not getting the screen time she had before because this guy is here. I mean, they've just mucked up the works. I mean, in some ways, I think even the Henry character from John Noble, who I love, what a great actor, even he's kind of not working because he's such the big bad. There's no letdown to him.
Yeah, there's no place for him to go. He had his – unless – I mean, this is what I kept saying is they're going to have to take him back, right? They're going to have to make him question because, you know, he's the front man for the real big bad, who's the demon that is sort of not personified, and although they're trying to make him more personified now because it's really boring if you have a bad guy who you can't see and doesn't say anything.
You can only see in the distance, right?
Yeah, out of focus.
Right.
But I wonder, where can they go with John Noble? You're right, there's too many characters. I thought that last year, one of the clever things was, even though, like, Katrina is in the opening credits, she's only in about a third of the episodes, or she's only in briefly, and it gives you a lot of time for the core relationships, because the core relationships are Ichabod and Abby, and then secondarily it's Abby and her sister and Ichabod and his wife, right? That's what the show is about. And having the sister be in more was great, because that is a great character and a lot of fun to watch.
And hot.
I'll agree with that. I always thought that the police captain character Irving was not that interesting, but by putting him like in the insane asylum, he's now even more boring than before because he has right. nothing, literally nothing to do. And what's worse, that means they've had to bring in a new police chief who is only, I mean, talk about a thankless part. It's literally only there to obstruct the plot.
Yes.
And that's really annoying because I hate it when the whole plot is that there's a boss who's the line from The Simpsons is, it means he gets results, you stupid chief, right? There's always the stupid chief who right. gets in the way of the cop who's actually trying to do their job. And so, yeah, it seems like they are bleeding away the things that make the show really good. And I think it's really telling. I have two episodes of Sleepy Hollow sitting on my DVR now because I just don't feel as compelled to watch. And I really like that show. But the first couple episodes this year, I'm like, where are they going? And I don't want to see all this extra Orlando Jones stuff in the asylum and John Noble. And don't forget, they also introduced the personification of the Headless Horseman. Because again, that's a character who can't talk. And so isn't that interesting? And so now they have conversations in their little house together.
Well, yeah, they actually, I thought it was clever that you could now see the Headless Horseman's head.
Well, that's much better than him being totally like a blank. That's
right.
True.
But now he's now a full fledged character again. He is actually somebody that the wife is actually talking to, and now he's a character. Now I keep saying Surfer Boy, and I had to get it right. I was like, I literally have not paid too much attention to him because I'm just praying in the back of my mind that he goes away. But the actor is Matt Barr. He's a good looking dude, and so you know he's been in almost every episode. He plays Nick Hawley, and I think that the Hawley character. Whereas the first I thought, okay, this is kind of dumb. He's here. Now I think, like, what are you trying to do? Is he going to be a permanent cast member? He's been in five of the episodes already, or whatever it is. He's not working. He's messing up the entirety of it. And I think the show works best when they do one thing well, and it's introduce a character who's clearly on the fringe and has some kind of historical relevance. Because when they can mess around with actual history,
yeah,
like when they have Timothy Busfield as Benjamin Franklin,
exactly,
that was great, right? It's like, okay, so that allows Ichabod to, like, I love that they use Ichabod Crane to either piss on or twist what we know in American history. It's always like, what, he was not a good guy? No. And he's like, you know, it's like the unreconstructed blah blah blah, and he's just annoyed at these people. And I love the fact that Ichabod is kind of like, oh, Benjamin Franklin, that blowhard, but he does like him. And then Timothy Busfield is able to in the, I think he's been in three episodes, that he's only in there for a little bit, and you're able to say, okay, great. Benjamin Franklin's kind of an eclectic dude, right? He's naked in a couple of scenes that we see him in. Timothy Busfield's total trooper for doing that. And it turned out that the thing wasn't about electricity hitting the key.
Right.
That's when they're creative. That's when the show is like, okay, we're messing with you. We're taking something you think is true, and our writers are gonna mess around with it and do something clever with it, which is clearly not true. But we're gonna make it fun for the show. What doesn't work, that's great. Just keep him in the background. But dropping Matt Barr in there as Hawley, to me has really hurt the show. And I think if you look at the last 3 weeks, the ratings are going down. And just from a structural standpoint, they can't extricate themselves very quickly out of this. They're ahead of what we're seeing production-wise.
Yeah, by quite a lot.
By quite a lot. And so, you know, Hawley's going to be around for a while. You're not going to get rid of him.
You got to hope that the producers saw what was going on and said, oh, this isn't what we wanted either. Because unless they made a course correction themselves, they're not going to get the feedback from the audience that they don't like this guy. And you nailed it. He is interrupting the core relationship that we care about, which is, quite frankly, you know, and even not romantic, just professional. It's like Abby and Ichabod working together is what makes that show work. And the more you short circuit it, you're not mixing it up. You're like keeping us away from the show that we want to watch. And then you layer on this whole new, we spent all last season getting everybody up to speed on the fact that there are supernatural things, right? Let's bring in new characters who don't believe it. It's like, those people must be really stupid because of all the things that have happened on this show. There's no way that these people are living in a world that doesn't have supernatural things in it. So they need to, so anybody who comes in, and they're just an impediment. They're just there to get in the way and locking the old captain up because he's crazy, because he believes these things. Well, yeah. So I they're making a lot of mistakes, and it's too bad because it's a really fun show, and it was one of the highlights of last year. And it started off, I thought, okay, but then they started making these tweaks that I don't know where they're going. I don't know what they think they're doing.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's they take a small step forward. For example, I think you and I can agree that Orlando Jones as Captain Irving was like not fully developed.
He was there to get in the way in the first season.
He was there to get in the way. And then they like him and they want something to do. And once he saw that, like, okay, nefarious goings on of the paranormal kind are happening in my town, you know, he kind of. The character turned around. You got to deal with him. And I thought by like introducing his family and his daughter and how she got injured and all this stuff, they finally kind of explain some things to give a backstory to him. And just as soon as they get the backstory, they lock him up in this mental institution. Yeah. I'm like, dude, that is storytelling 101. Don't do that.
Was he not available? Did they have to just shoot, like they got a week with him to shoot his scenes in there and because he had to go on a trip or something? I don't know.
That's the other thing when you complain about this. I love to think about like what are the repercussions of this like on the set, right? Like if you're Orlando Jones, you're like, okay, you know what? I'm kind of bored. I got like two lines this week. And if you're Lindy Greenwood, who I love, who's Jenny, it's like, okay, great. I was the sister who was locked up in season one. Now I have a full-fledged backstory. I'm part of the gang. I'm part of the Scooby gang. And then I'm supposed to have had an affair with this surfer boy you dropped in? Okay. And then, wait, surfer boy's taking all my lines.
Yeah.
I got no time. Like, I can go, I come in and I say one thing and then I'm done. I'm out. And so the whole thing has got repercussions that they need to fix.
That's actually what I was thinking about the guy who plays Ward in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who has spent the first, like, six or seven episodes of the season in a dark room. It's like, boy, that guy's job really sucks because that's literally all he's doing is like, sitting on the edge of a metal, like, prison bunk. Yeah. Having conversations with people in a dark room.
That's not fun acting.
No.
That's not fun. No, that's terrible on the set.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, let's hope Sleepy Hollow fixes it because that's been a fun show. I find myself watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. instead of Sleepy Hollow now when they're both on my DVR, which is saying something because that didn't happen last year.
Yeah, that's a total reverse of last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but we can tell
people. And The Flash.
So yeah, and The Flash. Now you're watching The Flash.
I know.
Of course, and I don't know if anybody else has been keeping up, as they should be, though. But Jane the Virgin is really turning out to be Rookie of the Year without any competition, and it's such a great series this year. For me, it's like definitely the freshman season, the freshman show of the year, and really no comparison. But again, if anybody has any questions about if there's something nagging you about a show and it turns out that I'm actually paying attention to it and Jason has some knowledge about it where we can go back and forth, you know, we'll deconstruct it a little bit like we just did with Sleepy Hollow.
And shout out to Jenny Ehrman, who is the showrunner of Jane the Virgin, who
apparently
listened to us talking about Jane the Virgin last week.
She did. She listened to our podcast.
Yeah, she followed me on Twitter. I said hello. She was like, it's great that you guys like the show. And so shout out to Jenny Ehrman.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
It's fantastic. And I'm happy for her too because, you know, it's if Jenny listens to this one, she gets through all that. She's like, oh man, I hope we're not going to mess up like Sleepy Hollow just messed up. but, you know, she's been in the business for a while. And it's like, you know, not to take things personally. She's done some shows that didn't work for me. And I'm happy that, like, you know, showrunners and creators can realize, like, you know, the critical perspective is like, we don't hate television. We just want to make a better show. And when you do, we're going to be there for you. You know, it's like, I much prefer to sort of be excited for her, for having created this really difficult to pull off television show. And within the first three episodes, it's actually gotten better, not worse. And it's increased its audience. And that is going to be that already is the feel good hit of the early fall season. And I think it's only going to get better and more viewers. I'm much more comfortable or at least happy to be like, you know, good for her, you know, good for her for hitting this one out of the park and taking that victory lap, you know, as she should, well deserved.
Yeah. Well, Lucky Seven, it's in the books.
Are we going to name every episode?
Well, we had the six-pack six-pack abs and beer last time. Lucky Seven, probably not. But
we have to do Great Eight, clearly.
Great Eight is coming next week. But this is the end of Lucky 7. It's been a pleasure as always, Tim. Thanks for talking TV here on Talk Machine.
You bet.
And everybody out there, you know how to reach us. TV Talk Machine can be reached at TVTM on Twitter. I am at Jay Snell. Tim is at Bastard Machine. Facebook.com/TV Talk Machine or send an email to podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And that's it for this week. Thanks for listening.